This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 345 for Wednesday, January 16th. It's not Wednesday, though. It's Thursday. We're a day late. We had to reschedule. Work stuff, adult stuff, not fun things had to happen. But it's 2020 all year long, and my name is Joel Duggan. The Citadel Cafe is where I hang out with my friends and we talk about nerdy stuff. And Megan's back. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. You can follow Megan at @omegantownsend on all the social media that matters and on Twitch, where she's going to be streaming soon. And that's, yay, as you guessed it, @omegantownsend. I'm going to spell that for you too. It's MEGANTOWNSHEND. Make sure you put the H
don't
in there.
Don't forget that H. Yes. It's very important. Townshend. Don't put it in the first name.
Hend.
Townshend.
Yes.
Yeah. Not Townshend, as people like to
no,
say.
No, I know. I had to relearn how to type Megan because my roommate in university, her name was MEAGHAN. And it took me a few years in university of living with her to remember to not just be MEGAN.
I was looking it up and I don't even know what the most common spelling is, but I see, anytime I see Megan in any kind of media, it's usually spelt my way. Like my way is like the media way. Mm-hmm. Cause you get Megan Fox. And if you ever get a character named Megan in anything, which is rare, but
right,
whenever you do, they usually spell it that way. Cause I guess that's a really common way of spelling it in the States. That's like the normal way in the States, but anything with all the extra E's and A's and H's and everything is like the very Celtic way of spelling it. Very like Scottish, Scottish and Irish ways.
Yeah, well, and then it starts to say, well, I mean, is it pronounced differently over there? Is it Megan? Like all that kind of stuff.
Well, some people say Megan.
Megan. Like Megan, I've heard of, and Megan and Megan are different spellings too. Like I always find that funny. I mean, I don't even have a name that people can shorten. I mean, if you take a letter off my name, it becomes Joe, which is a completely different name.
Yeah.
So,
Joel is a nice one syllable.
It is. Sound, it is. The tricky part about my name, and I've found this out when I was first starting to podcast, which is that I have a consonant at the end of my name and at the beginning of my last name. And they're two consonants that involve the same mouth shape. It sounds funny to say, but like when you say L and then you say D, your tongue is in the same place. So it's,
if you're a native English speaker.
Yeah. Yes. So, so you have to like put a pause between saying Joel and Duggan, because
I look like an absolute idiot right now because I'm mouthing out your name like silently. I'm like, you're right. The tongue does feel different.
Yeah.
Whereas, it feels the same.
Yeah. Whereas my sister, Andrea Duggan, because she's got an A at the end of her last name, You roll right through. Like you don't have to pause because you've got a soft A and then a hard D and you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, my dad's name is Paul. He has the same issue. It ends in L, starts in D, right? So it's the funny things that you don't think about until you have to say your name out loud like 345 times, you know, over the course of, I mean, I don't know how many podcasts I've done. It's more than this. It's this episode. It's every other Comics Coast to Coast and Spawn Chunks and the beginning and at the end and social media. It's all my name. So like all that kind of stuff. Like it's funny when you start to think about it as like as an audio communication on a podcast, it becomes very different.
Yeah, like you know, what do you think about names in general? Like names are just such a weird thing because it's just like, I don't know, they're made up words.
Yeah.
These are literally made up words that we are called.
Yeah.
That is like every individual person has their own made up word. Like it's kind of funny. But like I was thinking about it the other day and I was like, I actually don't know how my first name is intended to be pronounced because I hear Megan a lot, but I also hear Megan. Like with a hard G, and so, like it really depends on who's saying it, where they're from. Like growing up, it was always like my classmates would call me Megan because they're in Alberta. There's like a really hard, like it's a slightly different accent, and you probably wouldn't notice it unless you were really overhearing someone say it, or if you're like just used to hearing it. But like they put more stress and emphasis on like E sounds a little bit. Like E's and A's have a very like a lot of stress instead of like man to be man. Like it's just like a really subtle difference that most people wouldn't really hear. But my mom calls me, or my grandmother calls me Megan. But yeah, my mom and my grandmother both call me Megan, but I always introduce myself as Megan, but I go back and forth between it. So I actually don't know how my name is pronounced.
Right.
You can go, so, like it's
an E, but they pronounce it more like an A, which is a very Canadian thing.
Yeah.
It's a very rural Canadian.
Yeah. Canadian but thing. It's also, my mom grew up in the UK too. Like she has,
right.
She grew up in England, and my dad grew up in South Africa. So both of them have,
yes.
Like not a lot to hear them. You wouldn't say that they have an accent. Except, but there's some things and some words and the cadence of how they speak sometimes that is a little bit different.
Yes.
Like there's some, like my dad always refers to my mom as Dawn. Like her name's Dawn, but he calls her Dawn.
Right.
It's like a really, you hear that. It's very subtle.
Very subtle.
But if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't notice it.
So one of my buddies in university, way back when I did my fine art degree, Maskell Lasser, was from South Africa. And I mean, I didn't know that at first, and it never dawned on me because I mean, obviously English is first language. Like he spoke, there was a little bit, I didn't think it was an accent. I just thought he's also an extraordinarily intelligent dude. And so he just pronounced everything. Everything was very clearly enunciated when he spoke.
Yeah.
And it didn't dawn on me until much later when I started to hear more South African accents in media and film that I went, oh, he actually has a bit of an accent.
That's what
I was hearing. And the word down is one of the things that I would catch. I was like, that's an odd way to say that word. But I never misunderstood him. But it's down, just like, it has that weird, strange kind of twist to it. And I'm exposed now to so many different accents because a lot of the YouTube stuff that I consume and media and streaming that I consume for Minecraft, there's a lot of people overseas. Streaming is huge in Europe for Minecraft. And so I've got, you know, YouTubers on my playlists that have German accents. There's a lot of the technical Minecrafters. I have to listen very carefully because they're either German or Russian. And like they speak very fluent English, but boy, do they have a thick accent. And they're talking about very technical stuff. And if you're not listening carefully, you can miss some things. And one of my favorite streamers right now, Iskol85, he's been doing a lot with his Twitch channel. And I've been consuming a lot of his content. And I'm picking up on a bunch of words that he says that I don't want to say he says them funny because he doesn't. He has a Swedish accent. So when he says the word wool, he says wool. Like there's a long ooh. And then it's almost like the L has an E after it, like wool, you know, but he doesn't say it that dramatically. He just says it very quickly as he's speaking, but it's every once in a while, cause his English is perfect. Really? I know. Well, I say perfect, but his English is very, very good. But every once in a while you catch on one of these words or sounds that doesn't quite land. I'm only ever reminded of English being a second language for him when someone sends a pun, like they'll donate some bits and they'll make a joke and he won't get the pun because the play on words, it's like very much an English dictionary double meaning.
Right.
And he would know like maybe one or two definitions of that term, but the joke hinges on like the third or fourth or fifth, you know, thesaurus, you know, version of that particular meaning. And it's funny to me, but then it just goes right over his head. And it's only then that I'm reminded that it's like, oh, right. Like the dude speaks at least two languages, if not more, because I think he knows some German, he probably knows some other languages as well. Because I find most Europeans speak more than two usually.
We almost have to, because it's like, it's such a tight knit country. Like Europe is just so dense. And you can go, like I had a friend, an old pen pal from like my junior high days who lived in the UK. He was from Manchester, and he would just go to Paris for an afternoon
because
he could. It was like a 2-hour train ride. That was it.
I'm jealous. I'm looking forward to a vacation at some point in Europe. That's my next time I get on a plane. I'm not going anywhere in Canada.
But Europe.
It's we'll go. Yeah. Not to mention it's actually cheaper. I was talking to some people.
It is cheaper.
That have had to fly for family things, you know, either Christmases or unfortunate events recently. And the costs to fly in this country is stupid. It is
astronomical,
unaccessible.
It's insane, and it's weird because like, it's home. It's Canada. It's all close by. Why is it so much more expensive? Like, I don't get it.
I can fly to Toronto, or I can fly to Hawaii for like an extra $100. I got news, Toronto. Oh, no. No, not happening.
No,
I've been to Toronto. Then, I don't want to go back.
And then living expenses in Toronto, like to get a hotel, is probably more expensive than Hawaii.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, Airbnb does offer some options. I've seen some pretty. I've been following a bunch of people that do like travel photography, and one of the nice things they share on their Instagram stories is things like, you know, Airbnb deals, and like the not some necessarily like deals, but like just they're sharing the finds, you know, like, so if you dig and you look hard enough and far enough in advance, they're like, I'm staying in this like villa that's got windows on two sides of it for, you know, $20 American a night or something crazy because of whatever country they're in, or like, you know, now granted, it's not, they're not in downtown Paris, right? I mean, they're probably off the beaten path, but that's where I would want to be anyway. I wouldn't mind visiting a city, but I don't want to go for a 2-week vacation and stay in London or, you know, or Paris or anything like that. Right.
You probably want to go somewhere like Nice.
Or, yeah. For me, Tuscany, like Scotland, you know, Italy, like I would want to be able to do some hiking and really for me as a freelancer to get away, it's really tough. So the plan is to work remotely, you know, for like a month or more, and try to do it that way, because ultimately you're probably going to be spending about the same amount of money, because really you have to get the flights over there are going to be the big costs, you know, your food and lodging. If you do Airbnb, it's not going to be as much as it would be in hotels and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can probably extend the stay longer. And if I can do something where I can work a couple days in the week and then take 4 days off to explore on weekends, then that means that I'm not left with, well, I have zero income coming in for the month that I'm away. And that's because that's tricky, you know, like because obviously as a freelancer, I don't get paid vacation. Although I have to say, I don't remember whether I mentioned this on the Citadel Cafe. So, and I'll get this out of the way now and then we can move on. I know I mentioned it to the patrons on the Spawn Chunks, but to all the people that are patrons of the Citadel Cafe or personal patrons on my, you know, for my Twitch and video creation stuff, I really appreciate the support over the last year. 2019 has seen a lot of growth and I'm hoping to continue that in 2020, but it allowed me as a freelancer to take, 10 plus days off for Christmas vacation this year. It was phenomenal.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't get to do that. Like, that's not a thing that freelancers often get to do, right? Well, I mean, the average person doesn't get to take that kind of time off. Yeah. Usually people work up to Christmas Eve, they have a couple days off, and then they're back between Christmas and New Year's and stuff like that. And I mean, I did do some things. Like, I checked email so that it wasn't a mountain when I came back in 2020. And I did a lot of work around the studio, like rearranging things and like some stuff like that. But I didn't actually sit down and do any client work. I didn't have to do any, podcasting and stuff I always take off because obviously co-hosts and everybody wants to spend time with their family. But like, I didn't do anything like that. And that's a rare thing because normally whenever you take a day off, that's just zero income coming from that day. But because I've got this buildup of patrons that support the content, it's this constant trickle. And so it just allows you to kind of build up that trickle so that when you do want to take a few days off for whatever reason, you can. And it allows you that kind of flexibility. And it's been an excellent year in 2019 for work-life balance. And I mean, I can't thank the patrons enough. I think it's just, it's such a cool way for me as a creator to be able to create better. I don't know how to articulate that more, but like it just gives me some freedom to not take crappy contracts. I'm not overworked, you know, like it gives me some freedom to like do stuff like that. And obviously the freedom to take some vacation. So yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's been great. It's been super, super great. But we can move on to what we have been consuming over the week. And as per a little bit of a hint last week, I got back into Star Wars Rebels on Disney Plus. This is an animated show. I've seen the first two seasons. I don't remember how I watched them. They might have been on TV. They might have been something I downloaded. I don't really recall. But now that I've got Disney Plus and there's new Clone Wars content coming out in February 17th, I think we said, was the new Clone Wars season. So it's one of those things that I wanted to kind of catch up on. And I started to watch season three and I fell off and I don't remember why. I think it just might have been getting too busy or just not having access, because I've watched 5 episodes of season three and I think I've seen all of these before. It's been long enough that I don't remember the plot, so it's good that I'm watching them again. But the overall feeling, like the characters and how they're acting, I'm definitely remembering. I just don't remember the reasons for it. So it's one of those things where it's been a good watch because it's good Star Wars. Like it's got action, it's got some comedy, it's not as kiddie as it first started. Like season one of Star Wars Rebels was like Aladdin in space. It was very, very kiddie.
That's cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, like it's
really kiddie, but very cool.
And it's good because Clone Wars did the same thing, because it was, again, started off very kiddie. And then as they went forward and Anakin and Obi-Wan got into the Clone Wars, like it's really changed their characters. The models changed a little bit. Like Obi-Wan has a bigger beard and more gray in it. They changed the Anakin character to look more like Hayden Christensen from the third movie with long hair and stuff, which, I mean, not my favorite look, but at least it kind of felt consistent. And because it's a CG cartoon, everything like a spaceship, you know, or a star battle or anything like that always looks fantastic. The drawback is that the animation of the facial features and stuff like that is pretty rough. It is not the Dragon Prince. It does not look that fluid. The mouth and lip sync stuff is something that I've always been a stickler for ever since working in animation. And the main characters are okay. It depending on what they're doing and what they're saying. Characters with beards or facial hair do better. Any secondary character, though, like if it's not one of the main five people, the mouth animation on the secondary characters is terrible. Like it will pull you out of the show. You'll be what is going on with this person's mouth? Why is it moving when there's no sound coming out of it? Like it's just, I mean, it has to be some sort of algorithm. I can't imagine somebody actually animating that and saying like, yeah, that's good. That's done. We'll call that finished. It has to be some sort of program where they're saying, all right, well, this person is in it for like 2 seconds. So we're just going to let the algorithm, you know, or program do the mouth shapes for us, because it's awful. What I really like about the series, though, there's a couple of standout characters. I really enjoy Sabine, and she is the female Mandalorian on the crew of the Ghost.
Oh, I've heard so much about Sabine. There are people who like lose their absolute goddamn minds about Sabine online.
Well, for good reason. She is a strong female character. They don't beat you over the head with it. She's got 2 Mandalorian blasters and a helmet. She spray paints everything. So like her Mandalorian style is kind of like, in this timeline, this is really close to A New Hope. So it's like after the first 3 movies and before episodes 4, 5, 6. And because Darth Vader, it was in season 2, right? So there's a fight with Darth Vader in season 2. It's not a spoiler because it's like 4 years old. The show went from 2014 to 2018, just so people are in the know. So 2015, Vader was in the show. I'm assuming he comes back this season. I don't know. Cause I've been on IMDb, but I'm trying not to go too far because I don't want to get like cameo spoilers. But it's, that's the timeline it's at. So things like Mandalore have already been destroyed by the Empire and they've been split up. And so there's all these different things that are out there. Whereas the Mandalorian, the TV show that Disney Plus just put out, that happens after Return of the Jedi. So these films are like, these timelines are like 20 years apart, give or take. So anyway, it's Sabine is fantastic, and she's voiced by Tia Sirkar. And I have a voice crush on this woman. Like it's a good voice acting, but she's just got this really appealing, voice. And she's been in other things. She's been in, what's a Good Place. She's been in, I think the Mindy Project. She's supporting cast usually, but she, you'd recognize her if you saw her, but she plays Sabine Wren is the name of the character. So good. Really enjoy her character. She has some softer moments, but she's pretty badass. Like she's, you know, she's not headstrong. She's not going to shoot first and ask questions later, but she's capable, which is nice, right? Mm-hmm. Like she's not a damsel in distress at all. And actually the captain of the Ghost is Hera Syndulla. She's a Twi'lek and voiced by Vanessa Marshall, also a great voice actor. And she's, so being the leader of the ship, she's also a strong female character, which I quite like. And again, not usually someone that needs rescuing, right? Like there, it's very much a team. If anything, it's the dudes, it's the Jedis, it's the Ezra Bridgers and the Kanan Jarrus characters that are the strong Jedis that often get themselves into trouble, that need rescuing. Basically the Ghost, you know, flown by Hera, guns blazing by Sabine, has to fly in and pick everybody up. You know, that's kind of like the go-to ending. I mean, it is a cartoon, it is a kid show, so there are some things that that are kind of predictable about it. But I like the extended universe. Like you get to see like Twi'lek homeworld stuff. You get to see Twi'lek culture. It's been really, really fun.
Is it Twi'leks or Twi'leks?
I say Twi'leks. It could be Twi'leks. I don't know. It's like okay. The people that say AT-AT and AT-ST. I know people that call them.
Oh, I always said AT-AT.
Yeah. And I know people that say AT-AT, and I will continue to make fun of you forever. But apparently,
it's just, it's been, I don't have time to say AT-AT. AT-AT, yeah. Just gets it across.
So how do you pronounce AT-ST?
That's like the one exception. Yeah. I never really talk about them. I always talk about AT-ATs. Yeah.
That's usually the response that I get too. It's like, oh, we don't talk about AT-STs. but no, like, and I've
to
heard
be fair, it, I'm also not talking about Star Wars a lot.
No, well, I just
carry so, on.
Yeah, but I find that. But since I can't remember when or how, but somewhere in Star Wars canon, they said that either is acceptable. And so it just kind of like, so now the people that say AT, or the people that say AT-AT can say, well, you know, George Lucas said it was okay or whatever. Like, I'm not sure if it was George, but like somebody online in like the Disney canon has said like, oh yeah, no, it can be pronounced either way. It's like, what, why did you do that? Anyway,
I've also heard of some people abbreviating them as like AT and ST specifically. Like they don't even say like the AT-AT, they just say the AT and the ST.
Oh yeah. Cause it, so it, yeah. Armored transport and scout transport. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can see that too. I wouldn't be surprised if something, it probably happened in a video game where somebody said it like, you know, the right way, the wrong way. So what's nice about Rebels is because it happens so close to A New Hope, like the Empire exists. The Emperor is a thing. Darth Vader is a thing. So you've got Star Destroyers, TIE Fighters, AT-ATs, AT-STs. And actually the AT-STs come later. These are, I can't remember the name of them. I think they're AT-TTs, but they look like an AT-ST, but they're smaller. And so they're in there. Stormtroopers are a thing. So like all this stuff that you know and love about Star Wars are in this cartoon on a regular basis. Like the TIE fighter whine as it goes by and attacks the Ghost. Like all that kind of stuff is in there. So it feels very familiar. And to bring in some of the extended universe, which has always been a bit of a kerfuffle with Disney taking over things. Some of my favorite books growing up were by Timothy Zahn. The villain in those books was Admiral Thrawn, Grand Admiral Thrawn. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Star Wars character or not. He's a blue alien looking dude. It looks like a human with blue skin and red eyes. One of the very few non-humans that made it into the higher ranks in the Empire, because the Empire is basically racist. As this high-ranking admiral, he brings a lot to the table because he's an excellent villain. A little tame for the cartoon. In the books, he's a lot more ruthless, but it's a kid's cartoon, so you got to be a little bit, you know, fluffier. But what I like so much about him is that he's just this calm, collected, kind of like, not even monotone, but he's calculative, if that's the right word, or a word in general. But he is the type of bad guy that studies the culture and the art of the civilization he's about to either destroy, take over, or dominate so that he can do it more efficiently, you know, so he can hit them right where it hurts, right?
Right.
He does not go in gun blazing. He's more than happy to let the rebels think they won a battle if he's learned something that he feels will help him win the war. Right?
I see.
So he is not a over-the-top, cartoonish bad guy that you just know is going to be the bad guy and outsmarted by the good guys because he's a one-note bad guy. You really don't know what his next move is, which I think is really interesting. And it creates, because you've got intelligent characters like Sabine, Hera, hesitant to say Ezra because he's kind of annoying, but like Kanan, like you've got these adults that are good and level-headed and not the cartoony sidekicks. They need a villain that's going to challenge them mentally. And they have that in Admiral Thrawn, which I think is good. It also allows them to put a villain in the show that's not just some other made up red lightsaber wielding bad guy, right? So one of the things that I'm not a big fan of is that they've got Darth Maul in the series. And he was like, what?
Didn't he die?
Yeah, he was cut in half. Apparently he's got robot legs now.
He came
back in Clone Wars as well, and so they've brought him around, and I don't like the voice actor for him either. They give him too calm of a, they give him the same kind of calm collectedness that they give Thrawn, and it doesn't match. Like Maul, I almost prefer Maul not speaking, because he didn't say much in The Phantom Menace. But
did he even say anything ever?
Yes. Yeah. He talked, he said a few things to the hologram of the Emperor, something like, yes, my master, or soon they will be ours. Like he did one line stuff. Like he was meant to look mean and spin a lightsaber. That's all he was kind of meant to do.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's cool that they gave him some background and stuff in Rebels, but, I don't need another force wielding red lightsaber person when you've got Darth Vader around, and Darth Vader is supposed to be the last one. So I don't understand, you know, why there's all these different offshoots.
So
that kind of stuff is weird. What I do like is when they encounter other force wielders that are neither light nor dark, they're not Jedi and they're not usually humanoid. They're usually like these huge creatures that maybe speak or communicate via telepathy or whatever. And they'll pass on some force knowledge about, like, well, it's not about light and dark, or I'm familiar with these dark wielders. They're always one tracked and blah, blah, blah. And you light wielders are always sitting on your decisions and never making them. And so pointing out the weaknesses of both Jedi and Sith and stuff like that. And that extension I find useful and interesting. But yeah, they're just having Darth Maul be a villain that, especially because he's supposed to be so threatening and they outsmart him at every turn. It's like, really? Like he's the kind of villain I don't like in these shows. Whereas Thrawn, the way that they've written him so far, again, I'm only about halfway through the season. Well, five or six episodes. So a third. It's fun. Like it's really added kind of like this bit of nostalgia for me beyond the films, because I really enjoyed those books. And it's something that I'm looking forward to see how they handle it. I know from spoilers, from trailers, that Ahsoka is back this season. She was in it last season, and that was a huge reveal because she's not a kid anymore, right? Like she's an adult. And so having her in it last season, which was epic. Like I've gone back and watched that reveal and fight sequence and that season ender from season two a couple times on YouTube, just cause it's just so good. It's wicked, you know, cause you know that Ahsoka is Anakin's old Padawan, right?
Oh no, I didn't. That's cool.
Okay. Yeah. So you see, if you've got Disney Plus, you should really check out the Clone Wars. It's something that you can probably get through quite quickly. There's a lot of seasons, but it's the kind of thing that you could have on in the background. Because her story in Clone Wars, I think, is the runaway favorite. I mean, everybody knows Anakin's story. It's kind of hard to do prequel stuff because you know where a lot of people end up. I really enjoyed Kenobi in the Clone Wars because they gave him more depth. But as far as new characters, where you don't know where they're going because they've been introduced in these cartoons, Ahsoka was really cool. She also gets much cooler in the later seasons because she starts to develop her own lightsaber fighting styles and her own, you know, she makes her own decisions. And then when she shows up in Rebels season two, I mean, she's a full Jedi grown up. Like she's, you know, not a teenager anymore. And so she's powerful and has these, and has this presence, and same voice actor too. And I'm struggling to remember who it is. But yeah, like just stuff like that. I'm looking forward to more things like that. I have an unfortunate feeling I'm going to have to get through some filler episodes, because this stuff was made for traditional television.
Right.
So I'm going to have to get through, the episodes of the mid season. I'm starting to get into that now. There's an episode right now that's got something to do with Sabine's backstory. And while I'm interested in Sabine, the secondary characters that they have to help tell this story are terrible. Like they're one note. They're animated so poorly because they're only in it for like a couple episodes. And it's so hard to watch. I actually stopped halfway through my latest episode because really? I just got fed up of like, this guy is just, he just, every time he opens his mouth, he says the same thing. I don't even remember his name. He's some prisoner that they have, and he's a Mandalorian. He's supposed to be their leader, but he's a bad guy. So they've got him imprisoned. And so it's like, you're like, why are you letting him out of the cage? Because you know as soon as you let him out of the cage, he's going to do something. He's going to get away. And then the rest of the show is going to be trying to either get him back or let him go. And anyway, it becomes very predictable when they do these side stories. Anything that's got a major plot arc tends to be a much better show. Any of these side stories are just like garbage. So still, overall, visually appealing, great music, great effects. It feels like Star Wars. So if you're jonesing for some more Star Wars after Rise of Skywalker, then I would suggest Star Wars Rebels on Disney Plus. And as a secondary, catch up on Clone Wars, because there's a new season of Clone Wars coming out next month. So what have you been watching, I guess, on your weekly screens?
So my roommate and I just finished, Bethley watched it before I did, but we watched it again the other night. We watched Dracula, the new Netflix original.
Is it a movie or is it a TV show?
It's a series.
Okay.
So, are you familiar with the BBC Sherlock?
Yep, love them.
Written by the same guys.
Okay.
So Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, wrote it. And it's of course inspired by the Bram Stoker novel. And it kind of is like just a live action retelling of the novel in the first two episodes, basically. So a lot of the characters that show up are also in the novel. You have Jonathan Harker, who like goes to the castle to he's a lawyer, and he goes to meet with Count Dracula, who is, and no one will go near it. Everyone's like, take this cross. We're not taking you any nearer to the castle. We'll get, like, he has a driver that'll come pick you up, but like, this is as far as we're going, because he's still like a mile away from the castle. There's like, this is as far as we're going. We're not going any closer. Because, vampire. Everyone's afraid of him. And when you first see him, he looks just like he's going to die in 2 minutes. Like, he's like on a cane. He's haggard looking. And like the performances are amazing. Like the accents that people use, they managed to really pinpoint some very exact accents. Because British actors are amazing at that, and I can't figure out why they can all just do accents so well. So it's really, really well written for the first two episodes. If you can just go and watch just the first two episodes, it's great. It's fine. There's three episodes in total. The third one is, I have opinions anyway. It's really, really great. I think the one thing that I found a little annoying. Okay. So I'll backtrack a little bit. So they have the Van Helsing character. And are you familiar with Van Helsing at all?
Only the film.
Okay. So Van Helsing as like, an individual was like, kind of partnered along with the whole Dracula series to be like the monster hunter, like the good guy to Dracula's bad guy, right? Essentially. Interestingly, they made Van Helsing a woman. So she's a nun in this one, but she's like a demon hunting nun, which is kind of fun in its own right. She's like this nun who's like questioning the validity of God and everything, and she's like always just looking, she's like, God sucks, but here I am still being a nun anyway. So she's got some interesting layers to her. Now, I don't know if this is just what, you know, the accent sounds like, but she's meant to be from, where is it? Van Helsing is meant to be from, I don't know, like Switzerland or something, or Normandy. She's from other country aside from Transylvania. And so her accent and like the cadence that she used to talk was a little bit irritating to listen to at times, but I think that was just like, you know, the accent that she was using for that, like for that character. And I don't think that's anything to do with like the performance, because the actress who played Van Helsing was amazing. Like, she was very, very good. And in episode 3, you really see her acting chops come through, which sucks because episode 3 sucked and she's hardly in it. But there's this whole underlined thing, like this whole thing that like Dracula keeps saying, blood is lives, blood is history. So Dracula's whole thing is whenever he drinks the blood of somebody, he takes on a lot of their traits. He learns things from them, which is why he's able to do so many things, is why he's good at so many things. So when he first meets Jonathan Harker, because Jonathan's a lawyer, he suddenly develops a really, really, Dracula develops a really good understanding of law and is able to talk like a lawyer. Like, he's able to, like, you know, debate himself out of situations for the remainder of the series because he's adopted this sort of lawyer persona. And his whole thing, like, when you first meet him, he was like, I want to learn English. Like, I'm not very good at English. And he has like this really strong Barovian accent of some kind, or Bavarian accent. Barovia is from D&D, which is kind of like its own Dracula vampire thing. So after, you know, he first you know, starts feeding off of Jonathan Harker, his English suddenly gets really good, and then progressively starts to look younger and younger and more attractive as like the series goes on, because he's constantly just like feeding off of people and he's always, you know, taking bits of information. In return, when he then like at some point ends up feeding off of Van Helsing, and he ends up meeting her ancestor like 123 years later. And the woman who's playing Van Helsing, both like her former, like the original Van Helsing and then her ancestor, switches back and forth at one point between both accents. So the acting, what I'm getting at, the acting is fantastic. The structure of the story is like, all right. It's, you know, like a cheesy kind of spooky vampire story. But the last episode was just, it's set in modern times, so it makes everything very, very vapid and uninteresting and shallow. Mm. And it's not even about Dracula at that point. It's kind of just, well, there's a vampire in modern times. That's it. It's not really about, it's about like these side throwaway characters that we just haven't even seen or really cared about. And suddenly we're supposed to care about them a lot. So like the last episode was kind of shitty, but the first two were great. And it had a lot of like, it was kind of gross in some points. It was very graphic, but also in like a really neat kind of way, because the effects looked so, so good in a way that was a little bit eerie. But it was, I liked it. I would highly suggest the first two episodes. And if you want to end on kind of a weird note, sure, I guess watch the third one. But you could end at the end of number two. You could just end there.
But you could just watch one and two and be like, if there wasn't a three, you're not left hanging, or...
I mean, the only thing you're really left hanging on, there's this constant motif of like, why is Dracula afraid of the cross? Why is Dracula afraid of the sun? Well, those are just vampire legends. And they kind of seek to explain those legends a little bit, so that it's never really explained.
Right.
But I feel like that's okay, because those are just legends that have gone on forever and no one really knows the answer to them. And that's fine, because it's vampires.
Yeah.
Like, I was able to kind of like get, you know, deal with that in a little bit. And they explain it a little bit at the end of episode 3, but it's not in any way that's clear. Like, it didn't know what it was trying to say. So you don't really know why he's afraid of crosses or sunlight or anything. Like, it doesn't actually explain that at all. It just sort of like suddenly it's revealed, oh, he's actually not allergic to the sun. He can live in the sun. And that's it. It doesn't explain why. It's really, episode 3 sucks. The rest of it was fine.
Yeah.
The rest of it was great.
I feel like stuff like that, it's cool if they explain a little bit of it. Like, I they're not good movies, but they're kind of easy turn your brain off, watches the Underworld series that deals heavily with vampires and werewolves and lichens and the war between the two species and mixing them up and stuff like that. And there are some great things about it. There are some crappy things about it. I really enjoyed like the take on vampires. Like I really enjoyed the when they get hit by sunlight. Like it's not like they get like a little sunburned. Like they evaporate. Like it's like just it's like being hit by a disintegration bullet, you know, in Star Wars, like just poof, you're vapor. And dramatic, and it's a cool effect and stuff like that. So it adds some real peril to like when the sun comes up, like all the buildings that the vampires have, they all shut down. They have like these steel curtains, and it added some really neat tech because, of course, in a modern society, vampires that have been around forever would have a lot of money. They mass wealth over the years, right? And so I've always liked that take on it. I think I prefer vampire stories to be period pieces because when you take things, well, I mean, and it's true of a lot of stuff, even just going back as far as the 80s, it's one of the reasons why Stranger Things worked so well. When you take cell phones out of the mix, horror becomes a lot more terrifying, right? You are in the woods alone. You've got nothing, which means that no one can find you. You know, you can't call for help. Like none of that stuff works because it's, you know, the 1600s or, you know, 800s or wherever Dracula is supposed to be, you know, set. And stuff like that I find works much better. And plus, like, I like a little escapism in my monster stories. I don't want to just be downtown New York in 2020, you know, watching vampires walk around. You know, like I would prefer to have like that period piece kind of takeaway. How's the actor? I'm not familiar with him. I did a little bit of just quick Googling here while we've been chatting, and I didn't recognize his name. Where was it?
He's very good. He's got this, like, he kind of reminded me a little bit of Pierce Brosnan.
Okay. Cool.
A little bit, like I had like a little bit of that suave sort of, he was very suave. Very, very suave, but like he also was like very charismatic and very charming. But he does, like, he's got great facial expressions. But he does this like over like done smile, as Dracula, that when he's like trying to like appease people, that's like charming, but also just like a little sideways. So you know, like, this guy is a little crazy. He's just a little off. But it's like, it just looks like a big beaming, like genuinely happy to see you smile, but also something a little twisted behind it. It's like, it's something in the eyes that he does. But when
is he looking at you like food?
Kind of, yeah, he does like the big eye. I don't know. You have to see it. It's very good. Clay you see it mostly Clay is Bang in episode is his two. Name.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right.
He's excellent. Like he's a very, very good actor, and it's not like a depiction of Dracula that you would normally see. Like he's, you know, I wouldn't say that he's necessarily like sexy, but he's very alluring. I don't know, there's just something about it. Like he's I don't know, he's quite good. My favorite expression that he had was at the end of episode three, like when he's like, you know, first hit by sunlight and he's just like, like he realizes he's not burning. I mean, he has this amazing face where he actually is like heavy brow, but like mouth agape, just like what? And it just looks like dumbfounded, just completely gobsmacked. Like it looks like someone punched him in the face and he didn't expect it to come. And he's just, his expression was very good for like a frame. And then, you know, the rest of the story kind of got weird, but like his expressions are fantastic. All of the acting with everyone was very good. It was like BBC actors, like they're you know, top notch. Like anyone who works for the BBC is usually
right.
British actors are all just like, they're very highly trained. They all have very, very high expectations. They're all just very, very good actors. So acting was never something that I was ever concerned about, but the choices that were made in terms of the performances were very good. For me, I think the concerns that I had, especially with the last episode, was the concerns that were surrounding the choices of how the story itself went and the writing of the story. Again, it's first two episodes, amazing, fantastic, all period based, super great, and then. I, like, you know, seeing Dracula in a modern setting when he's like, you first see him with like a like a light switch, and he's just like, I like the noise that makes, that's a nice touch. And he's like getting really excited about light switches, and he's just like, you have a magic box. And his whole thing is like, he's obsessed with the sun, like he wants to be able to see the sun. He remembers it as being super beautiful, but he you know, thinks he's gonna die whenever he looks at it, so he's also kind of afraid of it. So when he can see it on the television, he like starts crying, and he's like, it's so beautiful. And he's like, he's kind of a little bit tragic, but also like just very homicidal maniac.
Interesting.
At the same time, so there's a lot of layers.
Yeah,
to
that sounds like that stuff sounds interesting in terms of the layers. I don't necessarily know about the whole fish out of water, like Dracula is now plopped into the. So you're saying that there's something's happened where he's not experienced history up until modern times. He's plopped into modern times. Without spoiling.
Yeah,
it?
He was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of. Literally, when you say fish out of water, yeah. It's almost literal.
Yeah. Okay. So
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So that, like, that kind of stuff to me has been done, right? Like that it's been done a number of times in different movies. Yeah. I've even spoken about it.
And I think
it on
that's why
before.
I found it really uninspired. Like, yeah. It was just like, okay. I mean, it's funny. Like, it's a good bit, and he's very good at it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see a vampire who's like got this wealth of knowledge just suddenly learning a lot of things. You can kind of see a little bit more of like how he uses blood from people to get information. Like at one point, like he comes into this woman's house, and he's already killed her husband, and he like, you know, half ate him and stuffed the rest of him in the fridge, and it's like one of those European half fridges. So he has it like all wrapped up with ropes and stuff, because anyone who bites is undead. So he's like wrapped it up with ropes and just stuffed him in the fridge. He's like, it took some folding, but I mean, I got him in there. Right? Like stuff like that. Like he's just really nonchalant about a lot of the stuff that he says. So
it's like arranging stuff in your freezer, right? Like, it's like,
exactly. Yeah. It took some folding, but like, you know, he fit. I don't know. He's just talking about like how wealthy this woman must be. And like, he's like, you have a magic box and you have lights. And like, I've, you know, been a nobleman for years, and I would never want to see anyone like leave this room. And it's just like a standard living room. Right. And she's like, my place is a dump. What are you talking about? But he's like talking about stuff that she has that would like, you know, comment on her wealth. And like one of them, he's like, and he mentioned that you have something in the driveway. What did he call it? And he like points to his mouth as he like kind of like clicks his tongue for a second, like tasting. He's like, is a car? Is that what it's called? A car? So like, it's like the nuances of it is like,
yeah,
it's like, the nuances are lovely. Like the subtle character moments are very, very nice. But again, like the whole fish out of water Dracula thing, like it's been done, but as such, he's not even really, he's the focus. The episodes are long. Like each episode is like an hour and a half, hour and 20 minutes.
Right.
It's like a mini in its own right. Yeah. So it's like a series of things. So they are very, very long. So there's a lot that can happen in the episode, but at least with like episode one, it kind of had its own plot. Episode two had its own plot that kind of followed into episode one, like it kind of followed from it. Episode three also does kind of follow, but because he's kind of launched 123 years in the future, and it's he's not even in it for most of it. Like he's in it for maybe half an hour of the whole thing, and most of it is focusing on these non-consequential side characters.
It's odd.
That you've never really taken the time to get to know. And like, they're interesting, and it's, you know, the concept of it is interesting, but what's interesting is like their interactions with Dracula. But and like, I feel like they kind of did Van Helsing dirty at some point, because she just became like a sideways throwaway character. And do you care about spoilers for that, like for her whole thing? Because like there's this kind of contention between the two of them, because like future Van Helsing is kind of poison to Dracula.
Right. No, I mean, I think we can probably wrap it up there. Okay. You've given enough of a plug that I think that people should maybe go check it out. I'm curiously interested in the first two episodes. I may take your advice and watch it in the machete order and just chop off the third head and call it done.
And if you feel like you need to close it out, like watch it. It's watch it if only for the good.
Just watch it for low
Dracula
expectations.
Moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch it with like, I went in with no expectations at all, and like had been warned by my roommate. She was like, I mean you'll see. And I was just like, okay. And then when I went in, I got halfway through and I was like totally checked out. I'm like, wow, this sure took a turn, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And I was, yep.
Yeah, cool. Well, I think we should maybe move on to the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you, dear listener. If you enjoy the Citadel Cafe, we are 100% listener supported. If you're getting some value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will give you an invite to the member-only Discord server where we talk about things like Dracula and Star Wars all week long. There are multiple levels to support with different rewards like Discord roles and even bonus episodes from time to time. The Patreon count is currently at 16. If you're like, Joel, that does not sound like a lot of people, I would say, yes, I agree. And maybe you should tell friends to come join and help support the show. Every month, I try to get at least one more person than the month before. So we're looking to try to get 17 patrons for February. We're talking about less than a cup of coffee a month, folks. So if you're interested in supporting the Citadel Cafe, I would very much appreciate it. It gives us a lot of creative flexibility. And I have a very cool environment we'll say green, it's not a green energy source. It's an environmental story this week. It's London's new artificial trees guzzle as much pollution as 275 regular trees. And you're like, what? That's a heavy headline. Well, there's a little bit more science behind it, which I won't really get into here. But essentially what they look like is a large retail window, vertical, covered in very specific mosses. And these mosses eat up particulates and nitrogen oxides while simultaneously producing oxygen. So it does the same thing of a tree. It's like taking a tree and like squishing it down and putting lots of trees into this one specific area. And so what these things do is when you put them around cities, they help clean the air, reduce air pollution, produce oxygen. They also will help keep the air more temperate because they keep the air cool around them as they do their thing. It sort of looks like an air filter that you'd pull out of a air conditioner, you know, like the little dust filters that you slide in and out. If you can imagine standing that up on its edge and then putting two park benches at the bottom of it and then like making it the size of a wall, then that's what these things look like. We'll have a picture in the show notes. They're developed by Green City Solutions in Denmark. And to quote the article, each moss tower has the air cleaning capacity of 275 regular trees, making them an extremely powerful tool for improving air quality, especially in polluted areas where it wouldn't be possible to plant such a large number of trees. Another handy benefit, especially given the scorching July we had last year, this is talking about London, comes from the moss's ability to store large amounts of moisture, which keeps the surrounding air cooler. And I just think there's such a low profile solution. Mm. Like the one of the maps on the Green City Solutions, they're kind of like little PowerPoint presentation things where they say, hey, here's where you could probably put them in your city. And what they were doing was suggesting that, you know, there's obviously the park benches version, which you can fit in any like double wide sidewalk, put them around the edges of a park, places, bus stops, things like that. This is not much bigger than a bus stop shelter, really. But
you could even make it a bus stop shelter.
Yeah, you could. Absolutely. But the thing about them is that without the benches at the bottom, you could also put them down the median in like a 4-lane street. You know, sometimes there's that grassy median that goes down the middle. And yeah, you could easily put them down the middle if you flip them sideways. Now, you can't put them all next to one another because then you can't see the other side of the street. But if you just post them along like you would billboards or street lamps, that kind of a distance, you know, between them, they would be unobstructive. Like they'd be so low profile, you'd barely even notice
and
them.
And they're also beautiful.
They're pretty. Like they're, yeah.
They're very pretty. It's just like just the photo I'm looking at right now. It's just like, it's like a big white square frame with green on the inside. It basically looks like framed plants, and it's nice. And if like you got some, maybe with flowers in there or something, along with the mosses, I think that would be, and it also would create more like floral areas for bees.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they have any flowering mosses. I think because of the specific mosses that they need, I don't know if there's anything that blossoms.
Okay.
They also might be conscious of like creating more allergens and stuff like that. So I don't know if they're necessarily pollinating. I think the idea is that they have to have such a dense like kind of moss that in order to achieve this like high capacity. They also have on their website, on the Green City Solutions website, which I'll have linked in the show notes, they go into some detail about some of the the science behind it. They don't explain any kind of patents, but they kind of say like, okay, here are all the different parts, including the parts that you can't see. And they show a different model, which is not this thin wall, but looks more like a bug zapper, but again, 10 feet tall. And so it looks like, basically it looks like an air filter that you would have in your house. Like, you know, those air filters that you can buy from like Costco, and they're like a tower, you know? Well, that's what this is, except for the benches, instead of being one or two on either side, it's like a round bench. So it's kind of like, it looks like a dumbbell, you know, like where you could sit on the bottom of the dumbbell. And then behind it, they show like this cutaway of like, okay, here's where all the moss is. Here's like the air parts, but then underneath the bench is like the water filtration system and the pump. And, you know, and then they've got like the air filters. Like, so there's all these different things that are built into it. And part of the reason for having the benches is one, to add some function to it, but also to house the irrigation system that needs to happen, because you have to keep this thing hooked up to a water supply. I don't know how much water it would need, but if it's supposed to be a green solution, it can't be a water hug, because that would just create other problems. So it has to be something that's virtually self-sustaining or does not require a lot. And I don't know a lot of the science behind mosses. Perhaps some of our more nerdy listeners could write in and let us know. But I feel like,
and we're plant nerdy, to be clear, because we're all nerdy
here. Well, yes, sorry. I mean, yeah, the scientists among us,
the science nerd.
Yeah, I'm the entertainment nerd. I don't know a lot about botany. I think that's the right word.
Yes, botany.
Yeah. So anyway, I just found it fascinating. I even found myself Googling how easy it is to put a green wall in your apartment. Like, how much work is that? What kind of plants work in what environments and things like that? And side benefit of having small plant walls, and they don't have to be big. They don't have to be 10 feet wide. You can make them like 2 foot square if you really want to. They dampen sound. So I'm thinking, ooh, with the amount of time, ooh, that I spend in my studio, I might be, instead of putting up foam like sound dampeners, I could maybe put up a couple of plant walls, which would be kind of fun, actually.
Oh my God. Cause I was actually thinking of a way to make like, cause the wall that I'd be streaming against is like shared. It's a shared wall between my room and my roommate's room. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, don't want to bug her if I end up streaming, like doing early morning. No, she sleeps like very heavily, but
right,
still, like, I don't want to bug her if, you know, mm-hmm, if I can help it. And I need more greenery in my room. That would be an amazing idea.
Mm. And it doesn't have to be anything crazy. Like, you could even just put up a teeny tiny little knickknack shelf and put a bunch of little potted plants on it. And that would be a start. Yeah. Like, you don't have to do a fancy green wall, you know, with mosses and things like that. But from my limited research, what I found was that you have to figure which wall gets the most light, natural light in the room. And if it doesn't get a lot, then you have to choose the plants and the mosses that you put on there specifically for ones that need less light. Otherwise, you'll end up with stuff just dying, because it needs to be in better sunlight. My concern is that a lot of my walls that would need some soundproofing are also above computers. And so I don't know how much water I want to have above, you know, when you're watering plants and there's always that little bit of runoff and stuff like that. So I don't know. I would need something that would only require to be like sprayed with water, not like watering can.
Well, moss, I know that moss walls and succulent walls, they only really ever get like a little spray of water anyway. What I know, I've been wanting to get into plants. I don't have any plants myself. My roommate is the one who has all the plants. But I recently, like, I'm just looking at my room. My room is so bare, and like, I feel like I need something to clean the air a little bit in my room, because I feel like it's very stagnant in here. And I like the look of plants. Like, just greenery just adds like a little bit of extra life into your place.
Absolutely.
And I know that like my boyfriend's friend, she has a jade tree, which is like a cactus, and where she has a bunch of cacti, and every single time she waters it, she just sets an alert to her phone that lets her know whenever it rains in Arizona. So anytime it rains in Arizona, she was like, oh, I'll just water the plants then, because that's about as much water as they typically need. Is if you overwater them, they'll die. And if you don't, you know, they can live off of less water.
Right.
So like, you know, whenever it rains in Arizona, which is usually like once or maybe twice a month, she'll just spray it down, give a little bit of water, like a cup of it, and then it's fine. It's good to go for a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Which is a good way of like reminding it, or reminding yourself of it. Right.
I've got what I refer to as the bachelor house plants, which are very difficult to kill, which is bamboo. I've got several.
Really? You find bamboo really difficult to kill? I find it or I find it really hard to keep alive.
So the thing about bamboo, with the way that I've got it, and you shouldn't have them in clear. It looks better to have them in clear glass jars with rocks and stuff. But the clear glass allows moss and stuff to grow, algae to grow in the water. Right. So I have to dump them out and clean them like once every 2 months or something like that. Which doesn't take a lot of work because, of course, it's mostly rocks. There's not a lot of water in them. It's mostly just something to have the roots hang on to. But I've got a bamboo plant that's almost to my ceiling because I've had it for 8 to 10 years, and it's just
where in your apartment?
Right have along the it? Yeah, you were standing right next to it at the Christmas party. It's by the bar.
Oh yes, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to like.
You would have to look up. you would completely miss it looking straight ahead because it's grown so tall that the leafy bits they start at my head and then they go up from there because the stalk has grown so tall. It's one of these things I bought for like $2 at like Pete's or something like that back in the day. And I had 3 or 4 of them in the same pot, but I didn't separate them early enough. And so one grew faster and basically took all the nutrients and the other two died. But before the other two died, I cut the sprigs off of them and kind of like replanted them. Now, technically you could move bamboo into soil, but, when you do that, the root structure obviously like expands to, accommodate the space that you give it. And so I didn't want to have dirt and all that kind of stuff in the apartment. So having just rocks and water keeps it easy for me. It also keeps the plants from like trying to grow through the roof of the apartment, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Cause some of them,
cause they will not stop.
No, growing. They will just keep like on going. Yeah.
Very, very fast.
It's very cool to have, but it's not a plant that produces a lot of oxygen. It needs no direct sunlight. It thrives in indirect sunlight. So my apartment is great for that. It also like, I hardly ever have to remember to water it. Like I just once every month or every 2 weeks, I just take a look and see if the water levels have gone down. Usually there's a little bit of a residue that I can see and it's gone down like an inch. And so I fill it back up, you know, and then, like I said, once every couple of months, I just empty the whole thing. They seem to be doing fine. I have to trim off some dead leaves here and there, but that's just the thing growing. Like it's just, you know, it's like, you know, it's shedding, you know, as it gets taller, the lower leaves just don't get the nutrients because all the growth is happening in the new ones. And so you have to trim them off with a pair of scissors, but, beyond that, I mean, they're
just fine.
Yeah. They're, you know, it's great. I mean, I had some issues early on with some of the leaves getting yellow really quickly. And all it was just, it wasn't in a big enough spot, a pot. Or vase, and it also wasn't getting enough light. Like I might have had it in like a really dark corner or a bookshelf where it fit on the bookshelf, but as a result, it really wasn't getting enough light. So all I did with one that looked like it was sickly this summer, I just put it in a small vase on my coffee table, and my coffee table will get direct sunlight for like an hour in the morning, and then everything else, then it just passes, then it's just bright but not direct, and in a week or two, it just flipped. Like it just completely turned around. I don't know enough about plants to have a lot of them around. And I also get busy and I forget. So the bamboos are low kill ratio for me. I do want to get a snake plant. Because snake plants are...
A snake.
Yeah, so it's a cooler name than it actually looks. You've seen them around everywhere. They're just these vertical, leafy, green plants. The leaves grow kind of straight up and down. But apparently they are one of the best, air filters to have around in like an apartment or a house. It filters out a lot of allergens and just creates better air for a house plant. Obviously there's other things that are better, but for your average house plant, apparently snake plants are like the best for that kind of thing. And you can find them on sale, at places like Walmart and stuff like that. I need to just remember to do that when they show up like this spring, to get one, because that's something that I could fit in the apartment. The pots are usually only about a foot diameter, you know, you sit them on the ground, on the floor, and just, they grow from there. But anyway, yeah. So that kind of sent me down this whole green idea for the apartment. I do need to be a little bit more, I guess, on the nose with that kind of stuff. I want to start doing some stuff like an herb garden, but which is doable in an apartment. I just don't have the know-how yet. So
one of the things that I've heard of before with, to start off with them, plant whatever seeds you have in eggshells.
Oh yeah.
And then you can immediately transfer the eggshells into little pots.
And then, yeah,
And you can usually keep them on your back porch. And then, yeah, it just gives extra nutrients over time. And that way it's recyclable as well.
And I've got a windowsill that will work quite well in the wintertime. And then I've got a balcony. And I can, of course, use like what would be like a hanging flower pot over the balcony. Most people would put like decorative flowers in, but I could easily grow some herbs and stuff. Because for some of the herbs and stuff that I used for cooking this summer and fall, I picked them up from the Dartmouth Market, which is great and not expensive. But I also just thought, like, I could probably grow some of this stuff myself and not have to worry about, you know, it would be just nice to always have like fresh summer savory, you know, around.
Yes. And I heard as well, if you take like chives or even like green onions, that, like, if you keep the part with the root and just keep them in like a really shallow thing of water, they resprout. They just keep resprouting.
Oh yeah, you can grow some stuff at home with some of the things you buy from the grocery store, sure. It just depends on what kind of thing you want to do. I tried once to try and seed an avocado pit. Instructions I found online, and it just nothing happened. Just would not. I gave it a month or two, and it just would nothing happen. I had to toss it. So
really,
yeah,
avocados are hard though.
Yeah, the article didn't seem to think it was that hard, but I don't know. You can't believe everything you read on the internet, I guess. Speaking of the internet, you can go to thecitadelcafe.com if you'd like to find some of the links that we talked to in today's show. If you want to know who composed the music, that was Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. But as I mentioned earlier in the Internet Minute, word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. It's 100% free to just poke a friend in the arm and say, hey, I really enjoyed the conversation that Megan and Joel had about Dracula and Star Wars and plants. Weird combo, by the way.
I know. Right?
then head on over to thecitadelcafe.com and check it out. Or you even encourage people to maybe check out the Patreon page if they'd like to join the community. We've been growing quite a bit from my Twitch streaming and things like that, and there's a lot of really nice people in my Discord, and I have to tip my hat to the welcome that they always give new people. So if you're looking for a cool closed community to hang your nerdy hat, then check out the Citadel Cafe on Patreon as well. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I'm doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. You can also listen to my other podcast all about Minecraft at thespawnchunks.com. And I am going to point you towards Twitch for not only some video game streams, which I've been doing lately, but also some art. I have been designing Twitch emotes for my co-host Pixel Riffs on the Spawn Chunks. And we did a few bits of my own Twitch designs last night as well on the stream. So you're going to get some video game streams and you're going to get some pretty chill live art streams. So if you really want to find out what I do, you can head over to twitch.tv/Joel Duggan and find out. Megan, where can people find what you are up to online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch at @OMeganTownsend.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.